Oh, we give thanks for this blessed day. Where did I get that? For we're all gathered here and those far away, for the time we share with love and care. Oh, we give thanks for this precious day. Let's try it again. Oh, we give thanks for this precious day, for all gathered here and those far away, for the time we share with love and care. Oh, we give thanks for this precious day. Good morning. I am Jonalu Johnstone. I am the minister of the UU Fellowship of Manhattan, and on behalf of myself and the congregation, I welcome everyone here. Whether you are a long-time member or a first-time guest, welcome. Whether you are a mother or not, whether your mother is sitting next to you or is far, far away, alive or departed, whatever relationship you have or do not have, welcome. Male, female, transgender, you're welcome. Wherever you come from, whatever your age, whoever you love, whatever your politics, you are welcome. We gather as Unitarian Universalists and friends, not with a common ideology or theology, but with a common commitment to build a community of welcome where we have a space to breathe together and inspire one another to be the best people we can be, whatever that may mean. Let's take just a moment for a personal greeting, a handshake or a hug for those around you, and if you can, introduce yourself to someone you don't know. All right. Our service this morning reflects on something on many people's minds today, mothers and motherhood. Now, I grew up in churches where Mother's Day often meant the recognition of the mother from farthest away and the one with the most children and the oldest mother and the youngest mother. What was that about? And so on. And people wore flowers that reflected whether their mother was alive or dead, and my mother hated those services. Too often they were sentimental and presented an idealized version of mother and family that no one could hope to attain, and it brutally left out people who didn't fit into traditional family structures. So this morning, I hope, will be some antidote to that. Instead of our supposedly universal experiences of motherhood that aren't really universal at all, we're going to enter a few select particular stories of motherhood from members of this congregation, and I hope that you find some point of connection in that. So please notice the announcements in your order of service. I'll make one note about the June 11th Progressive Summerfest event. It really is a community event, so use that as an opportunity to invite others you know to come and see what we're doing, and our community groups will be here as other community groups will be here as well, so you'll be able to learn something about them. And also, we're planning in 2 weeks on Sunday morning, May 22nd, to celebrate the flower celebration, which is traditional in many UU congregations. Some call it flower communion. Some call it flower service, flower celebration, flower ritual, whatever. I'd encourage everyone to bring a flower that morning, any flower you like, picked or purchased from your own garden or tree, not from someone else's. unless you have permission, but something you think is beautiful, and it doesn't have to be fancy. Any flower is fine. So we light our chalice as an opening to our service, and Arthur, with help from his dad, Matt Sayers, will help us with the chalice lighting this morning. So on this day of celebrating mothers, we are thankful for the miracle of birth that brings children into our lives, and for the wonder of love that accepts and nurtures children, no matter who they were born to. So may the light of this chalice symbolize the glow in the eyes and faces of all those we love and those who love us today and every day. Our opening hymn is number 21. Please stand as you are willing and able and join us in For the Beauty of the Earth. Someone once said there's no place like home, so perhaps there's no better song for this morning than Over the Rainbow.
Thank you. invite the children up for a story.
I think we got it. Did anybody give anybody gifts this morning? Not yet. You gave her what? Okay.
I did.
You did?
Before Mother's Day.
Before Mother's Day. Oh, my. Okay, so a lot of people are giving mothers gifts today because it's Mother's Day. So today's story is a story about a gift and what a difference that it could make. The story is about a magic vase. But we're going to put that away until it comes to it. So there was once a town that was very poor. And people didn't have a lot of things. And there was a particular family in the town that lived in a house that was kind of run down. And the yard really wasn't much. It was kind of dirt with some weeds. And inside the house, the paint was kind of peeling and the walls were kind of cracked. And it wasn't a very happy place to live. It was kind of depressing. And the family in this house were a little bit depressed. But one day, the oldest son went out and he went to the market. He liked to go to the market because there were so many cheerful things in the market. Kind of like a farmer's market. Have you been to a farmer's market? And what do you think he might find there? Fruits, vegetables. What else? Yesterday, I bought potatoes and lettuce at the farmer's market. What else? He might... Do you think he's going to find the magic vase there? Well, that is actually what he finds.
Magic fruit.
He might find magic fruit. Who knows? Yeah, maybe. So he went and he looked at all the many things, and he found a little stall where things were kind of dusty, but he poked around in it. And he did. He found a beautiful vase. And he thought, my mother would love that vase. It's so colorful and pretty. I'm going to get that for my mother. And he dug deep into his pockets. And he had just enough money to get the vase. So he went up to the woman who was selling at that stand. And he gave her the money. And she looked at it and she said, oh, you are going to love this. This is a magic vase. Now, he didn't know what that meant, but she said it was a magic vase, so that made him that much more happy. And he took it home. He was a little bit afraid that people would think it was silly to spend all his money on this vase, but he liked it. So he took it home, and sure enough, his mother liked it too. She's, oh, that is so beautiful and colorful, and I'm going to put it right here on the table so that we can look at it. And they did. They looked at the magic vase. And as the father looked at the magic vase, he thought, you know, that wall behind it is kind of tattered. And so he cleaned off some of the peeling paint, and he went down to the cellar and found some new paint, and he started painting the walls, and he found a crack in the wall. He patched the crack up, and you know, the next thing you knew, the dining room looked just beautiful because it was newly painted, and it went so nicely with the vase. And then another son looked out the windows, and he said, ooh, my, those windows are pretty dirty. And so he went, and he got some water and some soap, and he washed the windows off, and the windows were sparkling clean. Everything was getting a little bit better. And then the sister looked out of that clear window and said, oh, our yard could use some help.
So she went out and started digging in the dirt, and her brothers came and helped her, and they planted some seeds. And so time went on, months went by, and one day the littlest girl went out and found flowers in the yard. And she picked these flowers and came in and gave them to her mother, said, "We love you so much." And her mother put them in the magic vase. And everything was so much better than it had been before. So that's the story I have for this morning about the magic vase. And you all can go to your classes.
A reading from Lisa Bovee Kemper. In religious community, we share our joys and triumphs, our sorrows and our broken places. In this circle of care, we make space for the complexity of life, the myriad experiences that bless and break our hearts. The truth of human experience dictates that on any given day, we each come to the table with hearts in different places. It is especially so on this day, invented to honor women who nurture. In this circle of care, we honor the truth that mothering is not and never will be quantified in one single descriptor. Mothering can be elusive or infuriating, fulfilling or confusing, commonplace or triumphant. It exists in the everyday experiences of each person. There is no human being that is not connected to or disconnected from a mother. And so we honor the complexity of experience, writ large in flowered platitudes, but here in this space laid bare. Honoring the truth in each of our hearts, there is room for all in this circle. If you have carried a child or children, whether or not they came to be born, we see you. If you have fervently wished to do so, and circumstances of fate made it impossible, we see you. If you love children we cannot see, whether because of death or estrangement, we see you. If you never wanted to be a mother, we see you. If you are happy to mother other people's children as an educator, an auntie, or a foster parent, we see you. If your mother hurt you physically or emotionally, we see you. If you had no mother at all, we see you. If your mother was or is your best friend, we see you. If your gender says you are not a mother, and yet you take on the role of nurturer, we see you. If you wonder whether your mothering has been enough, we see you. And if yours is a different truth altogether, we honor your unspoken story. There is room for all in this circle. May it be so today and always.
In the spirit of that reading, of welcoming all who come, we also welcome into this space the joys and sorrows that all of us bring. Life challenges us and rewards us daily, weekly. And in these holy moments, I invite you to share sorrows that are weighing you down and joys that are lifting you up so that we may all be part of your life. And raise your hand, and I think a mic will come to you.
Gene Severs, thank you for your all-inclusive message there. Happy birthday to all the mothers, and I'm glad you included the opposite sex that often finds themselves in a mothering situation. My baby sister, unfortunately, is spending her Mother's Day in the hospital in Great Bend as a routine colonoscopy Thursday turned into a colon puncture, but hopefully she'll be out by tomorrow.
Judy Extell, I have a joy that my husband John is here feeling pretty good today after having heart surgery 10 days ago. And he had a valve condition that since childhood that was getting a little more problematic in older age. So it's all taken care of, and I'm really happy.
Somewhat off topic, but we happened to see a family movie last night that if you haven't seen this, if you're a parent or a grandparent, we highly recommend it. What was the name of that? Book of Life? Is the Book of Life. Really good UU message. Recommend that you, all people probably should see it, but if you have kids, definitely.
I'm Sylvia Beeman. I wanted to call attention to Clara Mayfield, who goes here with her family, and she made the front page and the sports section because she's a soccer star, and she scored two goals in their win, and it's a magnificent picture of wherever Mark is. So.
Sybil Perkins, I have a joy, and that is tomorrow Dave and I leave on a trip, and I'm going to get a chance to try out my new knee, celebrate my new knee. We're bicycling from Berlin to Prague.
We hold in our hearts all the joys and sorrows that have been spoken and those that remain in our hearts unspoken. And each week we collect an offering, and most weeks it's for the support of our fellowship, but once a month our collection is taken to do the work in the world that our values lead us to. And I'd remind you today's Helping Hands offering will be for the Boys and Girls Club of Manhattan, and Heather Howard is going to tell us a little about why our giving to them is important.
Good morning. My role with the Boys and Girls Club of Manhattan is Outcomes Measurement Specialist, which means I work with a lot of data, so please forgive me. Public speaking is not my specialty. I'm usually working with numbers. But I will just tell you that in Manhattan in 2015, we served 2,593 of the community youth in before and after school programs, as well as our summer programs. So we're getting really excited about the summer coming up to open our doors for that. We're serving about 50% of the public schools population. So the kids are really coming to us. And based on the surveys that I know for the data, kids coming to our program allows parents to work and attend school and just do those things that they need to get done while the kids are in school or need extra extended hours. So we really appreciate you guys doing this. I know that Janae Campbell is our executive director, and she's the one who wrote for this and said that we really needed help with our transportation. We have a bus so that some of our kids who don't have an after-school program at their school site, they can be bused to our 5th Street facility. So it really is beneficial. If we didn't have this support, then it would be a lot more kids that we could not serve because we couldn't transport them. So we really do appreciate everything that you guys do for us. Thank you.
That's beautiful. Thank you. I invite you to open your hymnal to the back to responsive reading number 649 from Generation to Generation by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. So if you read the part that comes second. In a house which becomes a home, one hands down and another takes up the heritage of mind and heart, laughter and tears, musings and deeds.
Love, like a careful relationship, crosses the gulf between the generations.
Therefore, we do not neglect the ceremonies of our passage when we wed, when we die, and when we are blessed with a child.
When we depart,
let us bring up our children. It is not the place of some official to hand to them their heritage.
If others impart to our children our knowledge and ideals, they will lose all of us as worthless and full of honor.
Let us build memories in our children, lest they drag out joyless lives, lest they allow treasure to be lost because they have not been given the keys.
We live not by things,
and now turn in that same hymnal to number 357 so we can sing together Bright Morning Stars.
Thank you.
When Jonalu asked me to speak today about motherhood, I thought about speaking about my own experience in being a single mother by choice, but you already know that story. And I thought about talking about how my mother influenced me. She was and is a great mother. She gave me a positive start on my life, and now I look to her for parenting advice, and I feel fortunate that I can call her my best friend. But then I thought about my sister Teresa and her daughters, who no longer have a mother, and how my mom, myself, my other sisters, and Teresa's girlfriends all strive to fill that maternal gap that my nieces now experience since my sister passed away. So my reflection today, is about the absence of mothers and the abundance of mothers. Okay. My sister Teresa is 11 years older than me. In my life, she always filled a dual role. She was big sister and a maternal figure. Teresa's the one who taught me how to write and how to read. I hold the pen funny because of her, and my handwriting looks a lot like hers. I was just 7 years old when she left home, but we lived together again for 5 months when I was a college student doing an internship in New York City. Then I moved to Washington, D.C., and we lived just 15 minutes apart for 12 years. Watching her parent her two daughters taught me a lot about being a mother. And being an aunt gave me some sense of what being a mom was like. And I began to understand why parents could say they would die for their children. Teresa and my whole family were excited about my decision to become a mother. And while I would technically be a single mom, I knew I wasn't completely on my own. I'd bought the sperm and was planning on beginning to try to get pregnant in January of 2007. And Teresa was going to be my birth coach. Then in November of 2006, Teresa was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. I offered to put off getting pregnant so we could focus on her treatment, but Teresa wouldn't hear of it. Thank you. She insisted that I continue with my plans, as it would give her something to think about and look forward to. Teresa finished her chemo and radiation treatments in November of 2007, and Jake was born in December of 2007. Teresa and Jake were in a contest to see who would have the most hair when he was born, and Teresa won. I don't know what I would have done without Teresa helping me with Jake the first 2 years of his life while we still lived in D.C. When Jake was 2.5, we moved back to Kansas. Then 1 year after that, Teresa's cancer came back. 2 years later, she was gone. Her daughter Meredith was 17, and Nicole was 12. Sorry, I didn't know it would be this hard. I knew Teresa had been counting on me to be there for her girls, and I felt horrible that I didn't live close to them anymore. But my sisters Janelle and Cindy, my mom, me, and Teresa's best friends all went into super mom mode, trying to fill the unfillable gap of the loss of Teresa. The first couple years were incredibly hard for the girls, especially Nicole. But now, almost 3 years on, the girls are doing okay, and they have more mothers than they know what to do with. Mother's Day makes me think of the children without moms or any parents. The lucky ones have people who try to fill those roles, be they foster parents, caring adults like those at the Center for Street Children in Kenya that my family is involved with, or those that just step up to fill a void they see in a child's life. I was fortunate to have a very loving family when I was growing up, but even I had other adults that became like parents to me. I'm Scandinavian, and my family was rather typically Scandinavian. We didn't express feelings much, and we definitely didn't talk about them. Then I began babysitting for Bill and Marcia Hemmen and their two boys, Ben and Adam. The Hemmens were demonstrative in their affection for each other, hugging, saying I love you, all the stuff that made me extremely uncomfortable. Then they began to include me in their affections, which was even more uncomfortable, until it wasn't. The Hemmens became my second family, and Marcia's the one I went to during my teenage years to talk about things that I didn't want to talk to my mom about. When I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Morocco, I gained 4 more mothers, Habiba, Aisha, Fatima, and Latifa. They all took care of me and looked out for me. And when my parents came to visit, they told my mom that they were my moms now. How is it that I was so lucky to have so many loving mothers in my life, while others lose theirs, like my nieces did, or the especially unfortunate children who aren't loved or cared for properly and end up in orphanages and foster care? The state of Kansas has more than 6,000 children in foster care. I feel for those children and for their mothers who may want them, but just don't know how to care for them or have the support necessary to care for them properly. As a single mother, I feel particularly bad for single moms who don't have the support system we so desperately need. It really makes me mad with our government officials blame single mothers for many of society's problems, when in actuality, single moms are some of the hardest working people I know. This Mother's Day, I feel fortunate that I had a village of mothers care for me, that my nieces have a village of mothers, and that I have a village helping me raise my son and be a good mother to him. I consider all of you part of that village. As a UU and as a human being, I feel responsible to try to help those mothers and children who haven't found their village yet. So while we celebrate our mothers today, let us not forget those mothers who need some support and the children without mothers.
When I asked Jocelyn what she thought I should write about motherhood, she said, "You should say that motherhood is hard, but kids are fun." My mom piped in, "But they are worth it," to which Jocelyn replied, "Yeah, because then you get grandchildren." Clearly, she gets it. I could stop right there, but I still have like 4 minutes and 30 seconds left, so I'll move on. I'm sure the people who nominated me expected me to talk about my journey as a young single mom, as well as talk about Jocelyn's recent adoption to Brent, which I did in my first speech. But then I decided it would be more fun to throw in a couple of memories and a brief synopsis of my life as a mom. From toddler speak, trying to decipher and later explain pop it, fitter fader, and my personal favorite, monster fuck, to the now tweenness that is door slamming, eye rolling, and the ugh after every sentence. Right now it's cute, but it's gonna get old. I think of my young mom status as a sort of gift in which I can remember with clarity what it was like to be a teenager and so filled with raw, uncontrollable emotions. Jocelyn and I almost grew up together. She definitely made me grow up and change my attitude and direction in life. Before her, I liked to party and drink and stay up all night with friends. After her, I realized I wanted to make something of myself that she could be proud of. And suddenly, my staying up all night was to watch her sleep and to make sure she was still breathing. Riley went to OWL this year. He is definitely more of a deep thinker than his sister, who took it twice and hasn't really asked about it since. But he asked me several questions, making it apparent just how thoughtful he really is, and I have to share, even though it may be too much information, my favorite thought of his. We were in the car driving, just he and I, one day, just recently, and out of the blue, he asked, "Mama, when the penis gets hard, what happens when boys marry boys?" Clearly, the answer to this question is not a conversation I was willing to have with a 7-year-old. So I manipulated my answer to answer in a way I was comfortable with and that was age appropriate. I told him, "Well, when boys marry boys, they need help to make a baby because you need a uterus to make a baby. So boys who marry boys will adopt babies whose mommies can't take care of them, or they might hire a woman to carry a baby for them." He was a little confused at that. But thankfully, he was satisfied with that answer for now. Welcome to UU motherhood. I love being a mom, I truly do, most of the time. Anyone who would be lying if they say they loved it all the time. And there are times I wonder what the hell I was thinking. Riley was blessed with every negative trait I have, I think. the stubbornness and hard-headed nature, and quit to anchor. We often clash, and it's a struggle to keep a positive relationship going when we are both in a mood. And Jocelyn needs a lot of cuddles and in-your-face attention for validation, and I am not a touchy-feely person, so it is difficult for me to find a balance we are both happy with. But all I can do is keep trying to be the best parent I can be to each of my children and their individual needs, as well as finding a balance that fits my own needs. Also, I look forward to spending my middle age with grown kids, getting to enjoy my 40s like most of you enjoyed your 20s.
I may compete with Marissa for the Kleenex box. When I was thinking about how to frame my talk this week, I heard something on television. Someone said, "I am who I am because you are who you are." And I decided I wanted to use that. And then as I was further writing, I realized I wanted to frame this as a letter to my grandsons. Andrew, Michael, Daniel. You make me who I am because of who you are. I am blessed and gratified to be the step-grandmother of three wonderful boys. You form a tribe and watch over each other, and yet you are so different. Andrew, at 14, you run quiet and deep. Your shy smile and the twinkle in your eye when I tell you something that you approve of gives me a frisson of joy. Michael, you are such a grown-up 7-year-old. I love how you are such an optimist and you see the best in others. Daniel, you're the most independent 3-year-old I have ever known. Since you knew the world, you have wanted to do everything your big brothers do. You are willful, but you are still willing to be cuddled and give me kisses. I grew up in the 60s and 70s, in the heyday of Our Bodies, Ourselves, Ms. Magazine, the feminine mystique, all tempered through the lens of attending an all-girls Catholic high school, which ironically fostered an innate sense of potential and accomplishment. We could function perfectly well without boys, so of course we would chart an independent life for ourselves. I expected to have it all: a college education, satisfying career, handsome and smart husband, beautiful and smart children. Well, my education went on and on and on. My career started to gain traction. My marriage to my handsome and smart husband didn't take place until I was in my 30s. My beautiful and smart children never arrived. Real efforts to become pregnant didn't start until I was in my late 30s. I lost 3 pregnancies, the last with a life-threatening ectopic pregnancy. Adoption was considered, but my husband was by then 42, the age at which his father had had a heart attack. His memories of the limitations that posed tempered his interest in child rearing at that age. When he died, my husband, my father said, "Maybe it's a good thing you didn't adopt. You'd have to be caring for a small child now." He meant well, but you can imagine how I felt. Maybe having a small child nurtured by us both would have given me solace. Well, as most of you know, I lucked out. I found another handsome, smart man with a daughter who has 3 sons, you. The children I never had entered my life. You have all introduced me to emotions I'd never felt before. Leslie Stahl, the esteemed reporter of 60 Minutes, recently published a book titled Becoming Grandma, the Joys and Science of the New Grandparenting. In an interview last week, she said, "It's a new kind of emotion you never felt before. It's full, body full. It takes you over in an instant." That's how I felt when I met each of you. Stahl's book includes a chapter on step-grandmothers. In it, she writes, "While step-grandmothers fall for the babies, the parents of the babies rarely make it easy. Seldom is there a welcome mat. There's no such thing as step-grandmother's day or a Hallmark card saying, 'From your loving step-grandmother,' although I did get a text today." So... Nevertheless, I'm the one, I feed you, I care for you, I play with you, and I rush to your house at midnight to babysit when mom takes one of you to the OR. I never had the opportunity to exercise the mom gene. It's stiff, it's rusty, it aches. I worry that I don't know intuitively what to do next with each of you. I take you to the garden, I take you to shows, I play games with you with crazy rules to accommodate all ages. I talk to each of you, I try to stretch you, and I encourage you. You call me Susan. I would have preferred Nana or Nona, but that die was cast when Andrew was born before I married your grandpa. The only time I've been called Grandma was when Andrew phoned me one day because he thought his father had forgotten to pick him up from school. And he said, "Grandma." And I said, "Who is this?" Sad, isn't it? So. Yesterday was the first day I did something with all three of you, going to see The Jungle Book. Michael suggested it. Andrew wanted to see it. Daniel came along for the ride. We shared popcorn, made pee runs, talked about which animals we liked best. I felt so content to be sitting with you, surrounded with you. It was a good day for me. Every day I spend some time with you is a good day. I am who I am because of you. You are who you are.
It's up from memory. No, sound like the piano's out of tune.
That was my mother 3 years ago, exactly. We played this here once before. 3 years ago, when she was 105 years old. She was a fine musician, and even though she suffered from some form of progressive dementia for the last 20 years of her life, she never lost the ability to play the piano, or even as her hands were gnarled by arthritis, she was urged to play, and she always launched into this piece from memory. It is titled The Gift of Love, which, and it has some other history, but that's what we mostly know it by today. That, I think, epitomizes what we think of when we talk about mothers. I've titled my remarks Mothers and Sons, because I knew I would be the only male speaker, and despite the hard acts to follow that have just occurred here, I will try to give some perspective maybe of what might be different about mothers and sons. My mother had two sons. Shirley has one son. My daughter has one son. So my observations are all on from that point of view. My mother began to play the piano at age 5 when the Pleasant Ridge school teacher boarded at their home. Also, at the urging of the teacher, she began first grade at age 4. That's not so different than today, beginning preschool or kindergarten. But when her brother left elementary school at the country school and they had driven a horse and buggy to school prior to that situation, she moved to town school, and she was held back 1 year because she was a bit behind in what one might learn in a town school as compared to a country school where 40 students had one teacher in eight grades. That was a familiar practice in those years. And she was never a great scholar, but what she excelled with is music. But anyway, she did finish high school. She drove a horse and buggy or a saddle horse alone for the last few years of her school years to school, and she did attend Washburn College at that time to study piano. For 80 years, from the end of high school until age 98, she was the go-to pianist of the community. Weddings, funerals, she was always in demand, and she was a pianist at her Methodist church. We had a piano and organ in our home. Unfortunately, her sons had no aptitude for the piano, even though she tried and tried. It takes more than a mother with a great skill, an instinctive skill of playing piano. Mothers and boys just don't necessarily translate. Well, she was born at home on a Rooks County farm in 1907. It's fascinating to think that she saw almost all of the 20th century and lived 13 years into the 21st century, dying at the age of 105 years and 6 months. Think of all the changes she saw at this time, the beginning of flight, internal combustion engines, but literally they lived in a lifestyle that involved only horses and humans as the nature of power in making their living. Her mother was a homesteader, arriving in Kansas in 1872, living in a dugout on the Solomon River near Alton. Her mother was descended from a very distinguished family in Connecticut, one of the founding families of New Haven. Even as a farmer's daughter, she lived in a cultured and genteel home. My grandmother grew up as a farm wife, and even though her daughter was living in that environment, she raised her not to be a farmhand, but to be a more genteel person. When my mother married, my father was on board, and she never became a farmhand. Her job was to take care of the children and the home. But she was greatly shaped by her life experiences, as you might expect, living over that time period. So many things that happened, including the untimely deaths of her father in 1909 when she was 16 months old, and her stepfather in 1930. Her mother remarried less than a year after her father had died, and he happened to be 20 years older and age 60 approximately, and had already raised a family. And I asked my mother, why did she marry that old man? And she said, a woman with three children cannot survive without a man. Well, that's really quite true. Even though my grandmother was a very tough lady, horse wrangler, carpenter, farmer, she did everything for credibility for a lot of things, and survival, a husband was necessary. My mother retained a lot of toughness because, for one thing, she came of age and married during the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl. It had a profound effect on her and everyone in her generation. The term hard times was a constant phrase in our household, and we were always admonished, don't get too uppity, hard times will come again, we must be prepared. But she was very strong, accepting the death of her husband and her mother with stoicism. And after my father's death in 1987, she spent 18 years alone on the farm, living by herself, strong and uncomplaining, and very secure in being able to take care of herself and secure in her religious faith. She was very courageous and self-sufficient. She was very quick to dispatch a rattlesnake with a hoe or to throw a rug on snakes that made their way into the house. She was calm. She was nonplussed by those kinds of events. Mothers, I have observed over time, are very glad to have sons, doting on them, some say, at the expense of their daughters. So I've heard daughters speak of being not looked after when many sons are present in the family. It's probably a cultural thing reminiscent of times when women were more dependent on men and could not see an independent future like most women see today. But I intended to bring a picture of my mother at her 90th, on her 90th birthday, but when I switched folders, it got left behind. But I just am astounded to think that she lived 25 years beyond her 90th birthday. And I want to mention that when she was 90, we took her to Europe. We took her with a tour group that toured Holland, Germany, Switzerland, and France. And the most memorable occasion that spoke to her character was when we spent an afternoon at the Louvre in Paris. And when we left, she was very reluctant to leave and said, "I can spend all day there. I just love looking at the art." Unexpected for a woman who lived alone on a Kansas farm and had grown up and, even though she loved to travel, had never seen much of the world. I want to mention some possibly unique observations, at least they're unique, compared to maybe daughters and mothers. But this one, as I have read history, particularly military history, is something that always struck me. This is what mothers fear, mothers of sons fear. They fear that their sons will grow up to die a senseless death on a foreign battlefield. It is well established that soldiers of all nationalities and cultures, when they are mortally wounded, call for their mothers. Whether you are German, American, Japanese, Australian, Russian, or whatever, no matter what the age of the dying soldier, they always call out for their mothers. Mothers also fear that their sons will find a compatible life partner, one that will not alienate her son from her life. I have much experience with that until I married Shirley, why that was a problem for both my brother and myself. And finally, the one that grandchildren will come to enrich her life. When my mother was old and in the nursing home after age 98, having just giving up driving at age 98 and having left her position as church pianist, I said to her, "You know, Mom, they always say that if you don't want to be lonely in your old age, you should have daughters. Why didn't you have a daughter?" Well, she always used to tell us, "Well, we were too poor. We couldn't afford another kid." But in the end, she said, "Well, it would have been nice." Well, maybe that speaks to my brother and I and our roles. But I want to finish by saying, talking about something I regret. Until the late 20th century, parents lived with their children as they aged and died. My grandparents and my parents' generations cared for their parents as they became unable to live alone. Multi-generational households were good for children as they became adults, and nursing homes appeared in rural America only after 1960. As people generally lived longer and in better health, older persons could hope to remain independent longer. Children scattered to the far corners of the earth and might not be available. Medicare and Medicaid became available to help pay for the care of aging parents. So my mother regrettably spent the last 7 years of her life in a nursing home. And although my brother and I visited as often as possible, it was not in the bosom of her family. She deserved better. Thank you.
Our closing hymn is number 331, Life is the Greatest Gift of All. Because it is, isn't it? Let's stand as you're willing and able. Before our closing words, I want to ask our music director, Michael Oldfather, to come up for a special announcement.
For several years in the early time here, Sherry Geiser was our pianist on Sundays when the choir was singing. We had other special events. And she retired to Northwest Arkansas. Why, I don't know, but that's where she went. And so we asked a few people if you had some ideas for who might pick up where she had left off. And one evening into this process, I was in checking my email, and I let out a yelp. And Kathleen came running in, "What is wrong? What is wrong?" And I said, "Read this message." And it said and the message read, I understand you are looking for a pianist. Would I possibly be able to apply for that position?" And it was signed Slavomir Dobrzhansky. And it took me a while to recover, but I called him. We met for a conversation, and quickly the deal was sealed. And so for the last several years, 12 or 15 Sundays a year, he has been at our pulpit, or been at our Yamaha. My singers and I and the rest of us have tried not to be a disappointing partner in this alliance. We did our best, Slavomir, and we are grateful to you. When I was reading his message, he said, "I don't want any kind of mention of this," or I'd forgotten exactly how he put it. Well, no such luck. That was not to happen, and so we are going to mention it. What we are going to do after today is yet to be determined, but today what is going to be the case is I'll ask some of the stouter members of our group to position themselves at doors so that he can't get away to all of the things that are waiting for him, and so you will have an opportunity to join me in expressing so much gratitude to Slavomir. He made me and our singers and the congregation better than we would have been.
We will miss having you at our piano. So, following closing words, I invite everyone to please join us in the Alsop room down the hall for coffee and conversation. In a house which becomes a home, one hands down and another takes up the heritage of mind and heart, laughter and tears, musings and deeds. May all our houses be homes. May we all be blessed with love.